of the microphones came off. Does somebody want to fix it?
Hell, I don't know how it works. Somebody coming? Oh! Got my story written here. From Texas. Aloha, you all. That's all they told me to do before I left. And they were glad I left, like they always are. And they always say, are you coming back? Like, I hope you're not coming back. And I see why people come here and don't go back. Jan, you've done a great job. God, this room's full of people. There, nobody's here. I noticed the island was leaning like this. I would like to thank Jan. Got me at 12:30 at night. She said, I'm sorry to wake you so late. And I said, honey, from Hawaii, you can call me anytime you want to. I would like to thank Jan and Patty. And Alice said she had a lot to do with it, whatever it is. And the committee for inviting me. God, we've had a great time. And I cannot say enough about Dick and Ann, who have really done more than you ought to do. I'm glad they're alcoholic because they've overdone it. And I like good sweet stuff, and I've just had it ever since I got here. I came early because I thought maybe you'd really do what you did, and you did. This is one of the few places that looks like the pictures say. You know, usually when you get there, it's not that color. It is. And I love that fruit basket. One of the best I've ever had. Macadamia nuts, candy, greatest fruit basket. And you're my kind of girl. And I ran into some people I know. I'll have to tell you this, and I hate to do it. But remember, I'm only doing it because in Texas, you have to. And there's people here by the name of Don and Karen that'll tell on me. I am Jim Williams, and I'm an alcoholic. Now, I've been sober. It's what you have to do in Texas. You understand? Is that right? Since August 28th of 1966. In Texas, of course, if you don't do that, they say you don't have a sobriety date. So when you come there, if you've got one, do it. Now, they won't tell you you didn't do it, but as far as they're concerned, you ain't got one. And I was glad to see Sally and June. That's God, Sue. Because they're my favorite Al-Anons. I've got some favorite Al-Anons except the one I sleep with, of course. Well, that's all the notes, except I want you all to know this is an early morning meeting. It is exactly 1:32 Texas time, so I appreciate you all staying up with me. I'm really not an alcoholic. I don't look like an alcoholic, do I? Do I? I'm really not supposed to be an alcoholic. There wasn't any way that my parents had any idea that they were preparing me to be an alcoholic. They thought they were preparing me to be a Southern Baptist. Now, you know who they are? They're the ones that pray for the Catholics. They're the real Baptists. Of course, you know, Episcopalians, they just got tired being Catholic. Presbyterians, they knew it was going to happen. And Methodists, they just didn't like water. I think I'd like to have been a Lutheran. They believe in doing everything just a little bit. I was raised in a little in Texas. They got 254 counties and 200 of them were dry, which means they don't do nothing. They don't have anybody drink. They don't let them drink. They don't sell drinks. In fact, they had a hard time having, do you know they won't let them dance because they get close to women? So they had a hard time having children. In fact, if they'd had that deal where you mail it, they'd have never touched a woman. When I was raised in that little town, and they had a guy stand up here just like me, pointing your finger at you, being thinking, you might as well have done it. Well, I knew I must be thinking it, even though I didn't know what it was, because they point your finger at me all the time. We're going to sing that last stanza for that one right back there. I knew it was me. I just knew it was me. I finally got to be 13, which will happen to you when you do what I was doing one day at a time. And then I got in the car with this girl right after school, and I got those funny feelings. And I told them about it. They said, we've been meaning to talk to you. I said, yeah, I know you have. You know we've been praying for you. You know, it's not like AA. AA said, saw Dick lay in the ditch last night. He lives. We'll get him. And this bunch, they see that gleam starting in your eye, and they know you're getting ready to think it. Then you're going to think it. If you think it, you're going to do it. So they hone in on you. Try to cut you off before you find out there's something else in life. Well, they said, what you need to do is meet us before the funeral or service. Because what you need to do is get saved. I said, what's the problem? I haven't done nothing. So I came down to church that morning and they all got together. We all prayed and they said, now, when they sing that last stanza, you come down that aisle. And I came down that aisle. They sang that last stanza and my throat hurt. And it's kind of like AA, except don't give out any chips. They all come around and greet you and hug you and kiss you and tell you how great you are. And you know you're not, but hell, I liked it. And they throw you in the tank and the handkerchief leaks. You choke a little, but you come out all right. Went to school the next day and saw that girl. Came right back. I said, well, we're going to have to do it again. It didn't take. They said, no, you just don't do it. Well, they didn't know. I didn't know how to don't do anything. I didn't know if they could just say, don't do that, and do it anymore. I said, well, how do you don't do it? Well, don't think about it. I said, I wonder why I didn't think about that. I thought, well, it's only 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'll go ahead and think about it the rest of the day. Then tomorrow when I get up, I'll never think about it again. Got up the next day and thought about it more than I ever thought about it before in my life. I had no idea that I'm the kind of guy when I start not to do something, I'm going to do it all the time. When I start not to think about it, that's all I'm going to think about. I used to try to wake up real quick before I thought about it. Finally got out of high school. Had to go to summer school to get out of high school. I don't think I was so busy. I don't think I was dumb. I think I was just busy. You know, we're tied up most of the time. You know, people, guys say, well, I walked by and you sit in the car yesterday. And I spoke to you, you didn't speak to him. And I said, I was having a meeting. He said, there wasn't anybody there but you. And I thought, God, how many people do you need? 30 miles away was a town that was wild and wicked and I'd heard about it. And so this one Saturday, that's where I knew you could do it during the week. This guy and I went over there and opened the door of one of these honky-tonks. God, there was that deacon with a warm girl in one hand and a cold beer in the other. I said, my God, let's get out of here. He'll tell Jesus on us. And we didn't even get to do it. You know, if you get caught before you do it, you ought to just forget it. This guy said, well, he can't tell anybody, but I knew he had a better shot with Jesus than I did. We drank, and he was happier than I had ever seen him. And I liked the girl he's with on Saturday night a lot better than what he's with on Sunday morning. We drank two beers, didn't taste good, didn't feel good, and I was glad to get out of there. And I said, the next Sunday I wanted to go to church, first time in my life. I said, maybe you get old enough, you won't have to go. There he was, sad like he always was. See, I thought deacons were just sad. Now I know, hell, he's just tired. Then I had my first spiritual awakening. Maybe you can do it a little bit, just don't tell anybody. God, I couldn't wait. My buddy, I said, wait, next Saturday we're going to go back. Had a big town, had two joints. Went to the other joint, did everything but commit adultery. I'd have done that, but I didn't know much about it. And you know how we are. We think about it all day, drink a beer, forget it. And if we do, we don't know where we did or not. And you can't ever find out. You can't call back and say, we're doing a thing last time. I didn't know it, but I'm getting ready to live a life of I don't know. I learned how to drink. Didn't even know I knew how to drink. You just drink one beer right after the other. Learned how to dance. If Southern Baptist is not allowed to dance, fell on the dance floor, broke my nose, did it five times after I learned how to do it. Blacked out, waked up the next morning, threw up, just like I'd been doing it for years. This guy called, said, how do you feel? I said, God, I feel horrible. He said, oh, but you had a great time. I said, oh, well. Then I knew how to have a good time. Just go out, get drunk, black out, wake up the next morning, throw up, then you know you had a good time. I had no idea he drank it any other way. I thought when you went to drink, you went to drink. And I thought people who messed with it put it and put fruit in it. God, now they're putting umbrellas. I don't know where you eat the umbrella or what you do. Or whether they think it's going to rain or what the hell it is. Ridiculous that they're having much trouble drinking today. Oh, you just open the bottle and drink. You don't have to do all that, but they have to do it. I saw a Catholic on the plane. I know it was a Catholic because they were drinking, you know. Ate a sandwich first and then ordered scotch. And I said, you're wasting your money, buddy. It won't be any good. Little bitty bottles like that. You'd have to order 12 at a time and suck them out of there to get anywhere. I'm afraid these folks are going to go crazy trying to learn how to get in here. They can't drink it fast enough the way they're drinking it. I was over at this little town one Saturday afternoon by myself. I didn't want to get drunk too quick. So I was putting it off as long as I could, and I walked by that post office, and there's a sign out there that said, we need you. I walked in there, and they did. They said, have you ever been to California? And I said, no. We're going tomorrow. I said, God, let me sign up. I said, I haven't ever been, but 30 miles away from home. So I went back, told my folks. My folks are already looking at me funny. I didn't fit in, and things weren't ever working out. I used to go with kids places, and God, they never did like me enough, and I'd go places they didn't want to go, and they just wouldn't like me enough. And my folks were already looking at me like, there's something funny about him. They just kind of look at me like I'm a black. And they said, how are you going to California? You don't have any money. And I said, I'm going with the Air Force. They're leaving tomorrow. Went back and we went to San Antonio. They live one day at a time, you know. And it was a funny bunch. They get up in the middle of the night, make their bed real quick. Somebody's coming. Never did. Then they want to go eat. God, not even daylight yet. My God, that'd make you sick if you hadn't been drunk the night before. Then they were scared because they always walked in groups. Never went anywhere. They just got out and walked. And whoever it was, what an ideal, decided we ought to take a surprise trip, which means we're not going to tell you, so you can't tell anybody, and nobody will know where you're going. Which makes sense to me. Whoever it was decided we should go to China. I'm in the Air Force, so we go to China by boat. They flew the Navy over and the Marines ran the boat. There's a lot of Chinese over there. They have a few hills and little trees and some rice, but they mainly just have Chinese. They're good at it and they like it. And there's no smog or anything involved, and it's just a good manufacturing industry. It's just, and they enjoy their work. Hell, they lose a few, but they're making so damn many, hell, it doesn't make any difference. Well, after you're over there about 3 weeks, you've seen all the Chinese you'll ever need to see. So I told them, I said, I'm ready to go home. We stayed 2 years. And we came back by boat. Then I came back and my folks said, where are you going to school? I said, I'm not going to school. I hate school. Couldn't get out of school when I went to school. They said, if you don't have that piece of paper, you won't be able to get, not even apply for a job, let alone get one. You'll have to have that piece of paper. Every man coming out of the service is going to have that piece of paper. I proved my folks wrong. I gutted that thing through, straight through, summer and all, 3.5 years, and I got that piece of paper, and I didn't learn one single thing. I made sure that every course I was going to pass it before I took it, and that it wouldn't benefit a human being whatsoever. You know what I like about you and I? We'll go to any length, even if it destroys us, just to be right. A lot of people won't do that. A lot of people say, you know, I could be wrong about that. Not you and I. The only time you and I will ever use that statement is when we're damn sure we're right. And we might say, well, I could be wrong about that. I'm having some minor difficulty with women. You put 10 pretty girls up there, I'll get the sick one every time. I don't know where I learned how to do that. I'd see some guys, they just go with any girl. They go with a different girl every week. Hell, you can't do that. You've got to make sure you got a pretty girl and somebody that you can take home and show to your folks and be in love with, for God's sakes. You can't just go with a different girl every night and every week. It's a bad deal. God, couldn't believe it. Take me about 2 months to find that precious sick little thing. Then we'd be so much in love in about 2 months, I'd almost have to quit work. Then they'd just deteriorate from there on out. I thought when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, this is the greatest place I've ever been in my life. This is the first place I'd ever been where they had the sick women group. And I like both kinds. I like the ones that got sick doing it, and I like the ones that got sick watching him do it. I don't know why God seemed to assign us the job of making sure that businesses operated properly. And you know, that's hard, the workplaces. Every place I worked, the one always wanted me to come to work on Mondays, which was my flu day. You don't have the flu on Thursdays. It's Mondays when the flu day. And it's hard to do the work and still make sure that they do the damn thing right. We cannot have it. Some of the places that fired me are still operating doing it wrong. Which probably means that most of us are too smart to be in business anyway. Finally got out of a job and couldn't get one. And the way I started looking for jobs, I'd get up every morning, I'd throw up and I'd spray. And I'd go fill out one of those forms that ask you personal questions like, where have you worked the last 10 years? Well, it's none of their business. They even want to know where you've lived. How are you going to remember all those addresses? I like to move around some. And other people like me to move around some. I waited and saved this one place that I knew there was a job there, and I knew I'd get it because I knew there was a guy there that would help me get the job. And I went in there, and the minute I walked in there, he said, you don't want this job. God, he's just like my folks. My folks used to say, Jimmy would never want to do that. Yeah, I did. You already done it once. Get ready to do it again. They'd say, Jimmy wants to do that. No, I didn't either. This guy said, you don't want the job. I said, yeah, I did. There's also something about me that you can tell he wanted to tell me, but he didn't know how to do it. I also knew there was going to be more comfortable when I left. So I went out and got drunk, waked up the next morning. I said, you know, I've been doing this for about 10 days. I think I'll just take the day off. Went out to the golf course and ate an old egg, an old piece of toast. I know it's old taste, though. Then I went around to my last friend, spiritual advisor, worked at the beer joint right next to the golf course. And he said, God, you look horrible. I said, yeah, I think I'm coming down with something. He said, my God, man, the way you're shaking, drink this beer and drink it quick. I said, oh, I'm Baptist. We don't drink before noon. That's 10:30. It's only 9 o'clock. He said, drink the beer. So I drank the beer and sprayed the golf course with it. I don't mind spraying if I don't lose my concentration. You start thinking about women or something, it gets your nose and burns. Then you've got to drink the rest of the day just to kill the pain. And I knew how to meditate before I got here. I don't do it that deeply anymore. It's just when it was me, God, and the commode. And you say, oh, God. And it's stringy. And you don't know where the end is. And you can't breathe. You get it back. It's good right after dinner, the story is. And then that deep meditation is kind of tiring. And even in the hot summertime, you'd just be down there and you'd lean over there and that bowl was always just as cool. I told this guy, I said, I think I better go home. I really think I'm coming down with something. So I start on the way home. God, I left to run around with me because I'm supposed to call on hospitals. I'd think about getting up and going out there at that big old hospital. You have a hard time finding the parking place. Finally, you can park that car and got to take that kit and go through the lobby and down through the base and wind around. You know they're not going to buy anything anyway. So you don't even have to park. Just drive on by. Wait till 10:30, go to the beer joint, tell them you had another bad day. So I went home and I got in the living room and I decided what I need to do is commit suicide. Then these guys that didn't hire me would worry about it for the rest of their days. I was living in Houston then, and I could just see it in the Houston Chronicle. Jimmy Williams commits suicide, and they'll never get over it. But I didn't know how to do it. Now I see it on television all the time now. Suicide, call that number. They probably got pamphlets, group. You lack the courage to commit suicide? Join us. This was even before overdose was popular. Remember that, you're just going to remember the pump. We like, the old heads like you to be sound in mind and body when you commit suicide. And I didn't like guns because I don't like noise in the morning. And besides that, they splatter all over everything. Razor blades were popular then, but I didn't know how to do it. They always said in the paper, cut his wrist with a razor blade. Well, you got two wrists. Which way do you cut it? This way, which, what kind of blade do you use? Straight edge, double edge, what kind of, you know, that nobody's ever explained, and there's nobody to call. I knew you couldn't do it in the living room. You get blood all over the carpet. Now I'm always thinking of others. So I went to the bathroom, where I did a lot of things anyway. Got my razor blade and sat down on the throne. Had sense enough to know that if you cut the left wrist, the left side would die and the right side would be alive. What if you backed out? So I cut both wrists so I could die evenly. And I'm just sitting there listening to the drip. And the phone rang. Then I thought, what if where am I going? I'll always wonder who that was calling. That'd be enough to run you crazy. So I'll put a Band-Aid on my wrist right quick. Answered the phone. It was the police. Police have been trained by ministers, you know. They'll stop you about 3 o'clock in the morning and they'll say, come go along with me. I've never talked to one yet, didn't have personality change. I'd say, I'm sorry, but I can't go. It. My God, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm supposed to be home at 7. They'd say, get out of the car. And I said, I'm not going. Then they really have a personality change. And you have to pacify them and go along with them. This guy said, where were you last night? I said, I was right here. And he said, no, you wasn't. I said, how do you know? And he said, we was there. Then I didn't want to talk to him anymore. I'd already learned, don't ever talk to anybody no more about where you've been than you do. I said, well, what do you want me to do? And he said, well, you can either come down here or we'll come out there and get you. I said, I'll be right there. And he said, if I were you, I'd pick up an attorney on the way. I said, that'll take me an extra 30 minutes, but wait for me. I'm coming. God, I love to live with me. I can live a week and a half a day. I've had a hell of a day. Been out the golf course, talked to my friend, thrown up all over the golf course, came back, committed suicide, had 2 big meetings. Now I've got to call an emergency meeting. It's only 11 o'clock. I just decided I don't like either one of those options. Besides that, I've been in Houston long enough. They've treated me badly. They won't hire me. And they fired me, and I'll just leave town. So I mailed the key to the folks. I didn't have any furniture. I had some quilts and blankets. Just had enough room to carve me old dirty clothes, clean clothes. Had one piece of furniture, an old lamp with a lampshade. Put it on top of that. Looked like the grapes of wrath leaving Houston. And I started out of Houston, stopped by and got a pint of whiskey just in case thing happened. Wake up the next morning about 120 miles away in a little town named Brownwood. And I'd had $36 when I left, which was plenty before inflation to start a new career. Waked up the next morning with $7. And I said, I wonder how my folks are getting along. Amazing when you really have a desire to see your folks. And I called them collect so they'd know it was me. And they said, what are you doing? I said, oh, just out riding around. They said, why don't you come by and have a cup of coffee? I said, I believe we will. I never shortchanged my folks. They're not going to get their money back. So I always give them my very finest story. In fact, I got to listen to it, and it was so horrible, hell, I cried with them. I thought, God, if I'd known it was that bad, I'd have left Houston 3 years earlier. John says, well, he's honest. Let him have 100. God. With 107, you could almost go into business. So, next morning, I knew I had to sweat that night out, and I got up the next morning and told my aunt, I said, well, Hanley, there's one little thing I left out. While I was down in Houston going through all that hell, I was drinking some. But I decided last night that I shall never drink again as long as I live. You'll never have to worry about my being underfinanced ever again. I'm changing my whole life. You're never going to have to worry about me again. My folks look at me just like a blank wall. After I got an A, I went up there. I said, do you remember that time? She said, which one? And then she finally said, well, I think I remember. And I turned around to John and said, what do you think? And John says, he's 33. He'll never live till he's 35. Well, I had $107 and no place to go. Might as well take a little vacation. I had got a guy a job, helped to get a guy a job in the Rio Grande Valley where I'd never been. That's the end. The United States stops there. And then skip to have this lake come down here. And then they got a little creek there and they changed it to Mexico. So I got right down there and stayed in one of those beautiful downtown hotels. Never took my clothes out of the car. Stayed there for 3 weeks. Get up every morning. Come down the elevator, go over and get my socks, shorts, shirts. Go back up. And I stayed there at that place where he worked for 3 weeks and they finally hired me. Now they don't hire me because they want to. They hire you because nobody's looking for jobs down there. They go down there snow dodging and playing, but nobody goes down there to go to work. Usually, when I would get a new job, I'd just be drunk and not drunk. And I'd work 7 days a week till I'd get up into my place. And I could level off and do my thing. A lot of times they had somebody in my place. They did. And I explained it to them for about 2 months, and they finally got rid of him and put me in my place. I was also still trying to get married. You know, I've been trying to get married since I was 5. And I decided what's happened to me is when I have my girlfriends, and then when I'm out of a girlfriend, there I am walking around in love with no girl. So what I need to do is have a number one and a spare. One day after I'd been there, about 8 minutes. And I started setting this thing up. I was just too tired to go get drunk. So I went home, just thought I'd rest about 30 minutes, then go get drunk. And this manager came over, knocked on the door, and said, you've been here almost 8 months. We need to get better acquainted. I said, yeah. He said, would you like to have a beer? And I said, one. He was a drunk, just like me. And he had one other drunk there, and the three of us drunks ran that thing for 7 years. Then he screwed up and they fired all the drunks. But I'm still trying to get married and I finally got me a number one to spare. So one weekend, my weekends were, I'd work Monday through Saturday noon, jump in the car, run the golf course, have a heavy lunch like a cheese cracker and a six pack. Get drunk and black out by 6:30, quarter to 7 in bed, wake up about 10:30, quarter to 11, go down to my place, and drink till 1 in the morning, then they'd close it up. Whoever was my best friend at the time, we'd go on over to Madame Morris and finish the evening. And at daylight, we might eat some huevos rancheros and throw them up, or we might skip it. Come on back on Sunday, drink beer, and taper off into Monday, and sometimes we made it, and sometimes we missed it. Well, this particular weekend, I traded off with a guy, and I'm up on Friday night at 11 o'clock, blacking out over at number one's house. And I just happened to mention, you know, sometimes we're just too honest, folks. Evidently, I never mentioned number two. So I just happened to tell her I thought I might drop by and see number two. And I went in the bathroom first before I left. And she followed me in there. No patience. She wanted to discuss it right then. You know why they're putting carpet in bathrooms now? People are insisting on having meetings there. You're supposed to have meetings out where there's carpet and couches and beds, not in the bathroom where the surfaces are too firm. I don't remember what happened, but I'm living in an old faded green trailer in an alley behind a motel. I had the rock yards a long time before they started putting them in. I'd see those weeds come up there and I'd say, you'll never make it. And I'm laying there asleep. I've already learned how to wake up in total fright in my own bed. And I'm laying there and something goes, wham! Jumped up, looked down, still had my clothes on. I said, oh my God, I bet I was going somewhere early this morning. Looked down at that old white shirt, had blood on it. Blood makes me sick, you know. And then I reached, oh, got knots on my head. Oh, I've wrecked my car. I have wrecked my car. That's what's happened. And that's the police. And the trailers, the windows are about like that. You can't get out. One door. So I finally opened the door, and there stood that 6'4", 240-pound Baptist preacher saying, come go along with me. I said, preacher, I know I look like I'm ready, but I can't make it. Wherever the meeting is, I can't make it. I just can't make it. I can't go. I'm not ready. I look like I'm ready, but I'm not ready. He said, get in the car. I said, "Preacher, I can't do it. My knot, oh, it's killing me." I looked out there. My car is okay. Spark's funny, but it looks okay. And I said, "Oh, my God, I've wrecked somebody else's car. We're going to the hospital. I bet we're going to the hospital." And I get in the car, and I can't breathe. I said, "Preacher, I'm going to have beer. I've got to have beer. I can't breathe." Did you know that Baptist preachers don't give a damn whether you can breathe or not? He said, "There'll be no drinking before the meeting." So we drove up. I said, "I'm not breathing. I said, I'm not going to make it. I am not going to make it." He ignored me completely. We drove up in front of her house. So I assumed the meeting's going to be there. The head's killing me. It's got knots on it. Still a little blood. Opened the door. And she did look like she might have fallen in a bush or something. And I said, "Well, I'm going to the bathroom." And I went in that bathroom and looked at my head. And I'm going to tell you something. She won. I'll never know the real truth, but I think what really happened, I lost my equilibrium, fell in that bathtub, and she stepped on me. 2 weeks later, we got married. We got married in the First Baptist Church, so it worked. We got married at 10 o'clock in the morning, so there'd be no drinking for the funeral or ceremony. I told her that since she had been married before, and I was pure, that there wouldn't be any use in us inviting a lot of people, but she could invite a few of her close friends. Well, I'm up again at 11 o'clock, blacking out again, so I get on the phone and start calling everybody I know, and just as soon as I got to church, this guy comes out of the church, my best friend, my beer distributor friend, comes across the lawn and says, "I'm going to tell you something. You called me at 3:15 this morning. We're not here to see you get married. We're here because we don't believe it. And I'm going to tell you, the longest bet on your marriage is 3 weeks. But I showed him. I hung it in there for 8 years. But my life changed. I had no idea how nice it was to get up and throw up in peace." Every morning I'd get up and I'd grab the... I was always going to quit smoking because it made me gag every morning. And I'd grab those cigarettes, grab that coffee and go in that bathroom, lock that door, and she'd tell me what I was through that door. And I'd have to get upset, go make the living. Get drunk, come on, tell her what she was. We did that one day at a time. Finally, I went back to that preacher and I said, "Preacher, this thing is not working." He said, "You know what's wrong with you? You're missing the beauty of life." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Did you know the fruit trees were in bloom?" I said, "No." He said, "What you need to do is go home and get your wife and get in the car and drive up the valley. Smell the aroma. Look at the blossoms." I said, "Yeah." I jumped in the car, went over, opened the door and said, "Get in the car!" She said, "What for?" I said, "We're going to go look at the blossoms." She said, "The blossoms?" I said, "Yeah, we're missing the whole damn thing." Got in the car, and I went by and got a six-pack of beer. We drove up the valley. I saw a sign that said 14 miles to Matamoros. Turned left, went to Matamoros, switched tequila, blacked out, missed the whole thing. Lost that job, couldn't get a job. Went completely crazy for 2 months trying to find a job. And finally, a guy that I'd been drunk with many times, managed a drug company, called me and asked me if I'd like to go to work for him. I said, "Well, we could discuss it." So we went out and got drunk, had a boat wreck, spent in the hospital 3 weeks, and he hired me. Didn't even have to fill out the form. Took him about 6 weeks to ship me to Fort Stockton, Texas. Now, that's west Texas. Got little trees out there about that high. You can see California on a clear day. 536 people lived there. 36 of them were making a living, and I joined the 500. And I'm supposed to stand in the drugstore and hold a pad that's got lines on it and write, oreomycin and all that kind of stuff that you can't even spell. And I'm standing there moving, and this pharmacist looks at me and he says, "Listen, man, you look like you're going to fly apart." I said, "Any minute." And he said, "Well, take some of these." Now, this was before Valium. Understand, Valium, both eyes crossed and he walked straight. This was just Librium, which is absolutely nothing. Little old two-tone green and black, two-tone green stuff. Little bitty stuff. Hell, I took two of them. Nothing happened. Waited 15 or 20 seconds. I'm used to something burning or moving or doing something. Nothing was happening. So I took three more. Then my knee just go, "Huh?" I said, "God, I've learned how to weave. Now I've got to learn new stance." I guess I can't do it anymore, but in those days, as pharmacist once in a while said, "Jim, I'm a little short of 10 milligrams. Is 25 be okay?" "Be fine." So they don't know. We go by size. We don't go by milligram. So I took Librium daytime, drank beer at night. If I ever wanted to go home early, after the third beer, never before, I decide if I'm going home early, I'll go get a pint of bourbon and put it on top of those three beers and that Librium, and you go home like you're supposed to go home, blacked out. Sometimes I was a little blacked out earlier, a little late, but my ideal time was blacking out just as I opened the door. Once in a while I'd catch it. Somebody recommended me for a job, and I got that job for no reason whatsoever and went back to Houston. And that was March of 1965, and I went back to Houston, and we had finally developed such a nice, sweet hate for one another that we were safe because the one that died first won. But it was best that we had a two-bedroom in case, you know, we got upset during our sleep. So we set up battle there, and my new customers never saw me drunk. I'd always go to my place, black out, and then go home. They never saw me drunk until the day before Christmas Eve of 1965. And I got played golf with these guys and their in-laws and these administrators of hospitals. And we had a big day, and I got a little too hospitable. Blacked out over at their house, drove from one side of Houston to the other. Blacked out, nothing new. I'm a blackout driver. Never had a wreck blacked out. Several drunk. Never. I'm a good blackout driver. If I'll just wait till I black out, I'm fine. Didn't do anything any different. Waked up the next morning, total fright. Did what I've done 100 times. Pick up the phone, call back. Sorry about last night. Wasn't sorry about last night. Wanted them to tell me what I did. They never tell you. They just kept saying, "It's okay, Jim. You just got drunk." God, and the people were telling me, said, "You won't be going over to their house anymore because they like you, but they can't stand you because you're drunk." Drunk was, nobody said alcoholic. Drunk was getting to be a bad word for me. So that particular morning, I looked my car back. I called back over there. They told me the same thing they always told me. Went around my car, no new dents or anything. So I picked up the phone book. Oh, what's the name? Gone next door. They was getting ready to have a Christmas Eve party. And I picked up the phone and I guess heard it on the radio. I'm not an alcoholic, but I look under Alcoholics Anonymous and call in a group. And the girl acted like she's glad I called. I should have known then I had the wrong number. She said, "Somebody be right out." Well, I waited an hour. Nobody showed up. So I looked in the icebox, had three beers, and I said, "I'll just call, tell them I don't need them. Besides, it's Christmas Eve. And, oh, yeah, I don't want him to have to get out." This guy came by himself. His wife was managing these apartments when we moved in there. And then moved to another complex, and he knew who I was. And he used to watch me going back and forth to 7-Eleven saying, "If he lives, we'll get him." And I said, "I'll just get rid of him." Couldn't remember who I called, so I couldn't call him and tell him I didn't need him. And I looked out that door, and here comes a little short, pointed-nosed guy with a book under his arm. I said, "Oh, my God. We're going to read that book and pray. I've not only been baptized, I've been rededicated 10 times. I said, I'll just get rid of it. He came back in there. We didn't read the book. We didn't pray. I don't know what he said. And about that time, what's her name came back in. He says, you want to go with me? Well, I didn't, but it's better staying with her. So I got in the car with him, and I said, oh, my God, I've made a mistake. I've gone off with a perfect stranger. He's not my kind of guy. I went into total fright, and I said, I'll buy a beer. I don't want a beer. God, I knew it. I waited about 20 seconds. And I said, I'm going to tell you something. I got bad drunk last night, and I've got to have a beer, and I've got to have it right now. Either let me off the top of this freeway, I'll walk over there to that youth totem, or take me over there. I've got to have a beer, and I've got to have it right now. Besides that, it's 11:20. He said, can you wait till we get to the club? Oh, yeah, I can do that. I can handle total fright if I got a little light. And we drove and drove over kind of a bad neighborhood. Drove up in front of this old rickety-looking house, and I said, this it? He said, yeah. I thought, well, when I get some money, I'll help these folks. So we walked in there, and there was a bunch of the deacons sitting over there talking about women in the stock market, and I found out later on they didn't know anything about either one. And they had an old bar back there in the back. It had some old linoleum on it, had holes in it. I bet it had holes in it when they put it on there. And the bartender looked a hell of a lot better than I did. Program of attraction, you know. And this little deacon says, mix him up a little milk and honey. I said, my God, what do you put in it? I never drank anything like that in my life. He said, well, you see, you're nervous. I said, hell, that's what I've been trying to tell you. And besides all that, you're used to sugar in your system from alcohol, and the honey has already been digested. I said, indigestion's not my problem. You know, if you throw up right, you don't have indigestion. I drank half of it, and it curdled, came right back up. He said, don't worry about it. We have plenty. I thought, hell, I'm going to put on a show for these guys. One of the smart ones said, walk all you want to. Hell, I didn't want to walk at all. They just sat there and got a new animal in here today and watch you going back and forth, talking and laughing. And I'm drinking that sweet, sweet, sick. Almost makes me sick now. Six. I hadn't had a piece of chocolate pie in 10 years. Finally, this guy said, I think we're going to go home. I said, yeah. I said, let me out a couple of blocks before I get to the apartment because I wanted to slip in there and get in my car because I knew that beer would not cut that sweet taste. I was going to have to go get some bourbon. He said, don't drink anything. I'm going to pick you up in an hour and a half. I said, what for? We're going to a meeting. I said, where? Right back where we came from. I said, my God, we're there all day. I said, okay, let me out. So I got out and I walked. Here he comes and back away we go. Kind of a funny bunch. I saw two or three of them kind of laughing and hugging and kissing. The rest of them, they didn't act like this. Too damn happy to be there either. And they started out with a funny little old prayer. Some girl got up and talked 2 or 3 hours. They said, just 30 minutes, but I know it wasn't. And they just laughed. Wasn't nothing funny. And then some guy got up and talked 2 or 3 hours. And they just laughed and nothing. You know, I said, God, this is a sick bunch of people. Then they all stood up, held hands, said the Lord's Prayer. My goodness, the Holy Spirit moved in there. One of them started talking at the same time. Not a one of them listened. I said, wonder how in the hell he did that. They didn't bring them down to the altar, lay any hands on them, sing any songs, do anything, sprinkle them. Didn't do anything to them. Just boom, here they go. So me and this guy are standing back there and I see the deal. Men and women jumping in those cars and laughing and taking off. I said, uh-oh. As soon as you're around here a little bit, you get to go over to these apartments and have a little drink and talk about this damn thing. We went night after night after night. Nobody invited us anywhere. I said, oh, I've got the bad one. I have got the bad one. One night in Houston, it just doesn't rain. It just falls out. And he called and said, I'll pick you up in 30 minutes. I said, it's raining. Did you ever go get a drink when it's raining? I'll be ready. One weekend, old what's-her-name had gone back to Valley, see if we had any friends left. So I just locked the door, pulled out all the shades, turned out all the lights, had nothing on but the TV set. That old phone just ring, 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 let it ring. Next morning, he called and said, "Where were you last night?" I said, "I was right here watching television. I enjoyed it every minute of it, and I may do it again tonight." He said, "Well, you missed it." I said, "What did I miss?" He said, "I don't know." I said, "Wasn't you there?" He said, "Yeah, but I only heard what I was supposed to hear." We'll never know what it was you were supposed to hear. I thought, "My God, you got to go every night. You'll miss it." Went 3 months, got drunk, 3 months, got drunk, 3 months, got drunk, and sobered up all by myself. And I figured out exactly what was wrong with me. I'm really not an alcoholic. I've really just always been underfinanced. And if I can get properly financed, then I can tell them all to shove it and I'm gone. Oh, what's your name and all. But I knew first things first, I'd already learned that. First thing I need to do is go back and officially resign and tell them thank you very much, but I'm just not one of y'all. The meeting had already started, and evidently, one night, while drinking, that last time, evidently I called him around 2:30 in the morning, which I doubt very seriously. They'll tell you anything, you know. Whatever fits the picture, they'll tell you. They've been sober long enough to know when they lie. So before, as soon as the meeting was over, I start to head to him to resign and leave and tell everybody goodbye. And he walks up to me and says, "Don't you ever call me again." I said, "God, I'm glad you said that. I never called you in the first place. They called you. And I'm going to tell you something your best friends will not tell you. Nobody likes you here. We don't get invited anywhere, and nobody knows me, so it's got to be you." And another thing, if I had as bad a personality as you do, I'd go back to drinking. And you don't ever have to worry about my calling you ever, ever again. If you was the last man on this earth and I was starving to death, I'd never call you. So goodbye. And I didn't till the next morning. And he said, "Meet me at the club." And I met him at the club. He said, "I'm going to tell you something about Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, Al-Ateen, Al-Atot, and Al-Dog." There's absolutely no failure here. Never has, never will. Impossible to fail. There's no failure. It knows no failure in alcoholics. It's just none here. There's none here. Provided you do exactly what we tell you to do, the way we tell you to do it. So now there's only one thing that you're going to get to do for the rest of your days. But you're the only one that's going to get to do it. But it's the only thing you're going to get to do. From now on, every day when you get up, you're going to decide whether you're going to go our way of life or your way of life. If you don't give an alcoholic a decision to make, they'll flounder on the same subject for years. So we're going to give you a decision to make this morning. Whether you're either going to go our way of life or go right back out that door. I said, "I don't want to do either one." He said, "I didn't ask you whether you wanted to or not. I asked you whether you were going to or not." I said, "You mean to carry out, you don't care whether I want to or not?" He said, "No, no, no." I said, "The group doesn't care." He said, "No, we don't care." I said, "Well, if you'll make it perfectly clear to the group that I don't want to do it, then I'll do it." He said, "Well, first of all, we've got to get some things straight. It's your thinking that's wrong." I said, "How much am I thinking wrong?" "We always start with all of it. And if there's any good, we'll let you know." I said, "You put a sign up there on the wall that says, think, think, think." And he said, "That's for us." He said, "Now we're going to give you some things not to do and some things to do. The things we're going to give you not to do will change. And things we're going to give you to do, you'll just add to. Then it's going to happen over there." I said, "What's going to happen over there?" We don't know, but it always happens. Now, so I'm going to tell you something. I've been listening to you and listening to you and listening to you, and you never listen to me. Now, I want you to listen to me. I listen to every word you said, and I do not understand. He said, and that's it, and don't you ever forget it. He said, there's two things that you must remember for the rest of your days. No matter what's going on in your life, you do not understand. Then you'll have understanding. And when you quit trying to understand, then you'll enjoy it. And the other thing is, no matter what your situation is, it's never the situation, it's never them, never her, it's never God, it's you that must become different. You must become different than you have ever been before. I said, how do I do that? He said, oh, you can't. I said, what the hell you tell me for? He said, that's what's going to happen to you. He said, now I'm going to give you the kicker. This is the very one thing that got you here. But it's also the very one thing that, should it not change, will be the one thing that's going to keep you from getting all the things that God has for His children. As long as you know that you know, you'll never know. But when you begin to do what we tell you not to do and to do, and begin to know you don't know, then you'll begin to know. I said, hell, you're crazy. He said, I know. He said, now the first thing we're going to learn how to not drink and take a pill. He said, you know that card that I gave you that has my phone number and four other men? No women on mine. When you get squirrely, doesn't make any difference what time of day or night it is, you call one of those numbers. Now, if you don't make the call, you didn't do it. Even if you didn't drink, make the phone call. Now, that's the way we're going to have to learn how to not do something. This is what we're going to do every day. When you get up in the morning, get out on your knees the first thing and say these words and these words only. God, take me today and let me be what you want me to be. Let thy will only be done in my life. Help me definitely not take a drink of anything alcoholic or a mind-changing drug. Amen. Do not need to tell God what He has not done, nor what He needs to do. God can handle that all by Himself. Then call me before you go to the bathroom. I said, why before I go to the bathroom? You may not need to go. I said, do you mean tell me you don't think I've got sense enough to know when I need to go to the bathroom? He said, we'll find out. They don't give you a lot of credit here, you know. I got up the next morning and I made sure before I got out on my knees, I said, God, you and I know He don't know. Hell, He's a Presbyterian. But we're going to do everything just exactly like He says, so when we get enough of it this time, we're going to tell Him to take it, and that's it. Got down on my knees, got up and made sure I needed to go to the bathroom, picked up the phone, called Him. He didn't even ask where I need to go or not. He said, go to the bathroom, meet me at the club. I met Him in the club. He said, now go to work. I said, I hate my job. He said, what's that got to do with it? I said, well, I hated it so much yesterday I couldn't go. And he said, oh, what'd you do, sit in that chair and think? And I said, well, till noon. And then I just went to the club. He said, well, you don't know how to go to work. I said, how? He said, go get in the car. You'll write that down, we'll catch it. And then he said, and by the way, later on you'll be able to do it more, but in the beginning, besides that prayer of the morning, when you get in the car, you invite God in today. I said, how do you do that? He says, you say, God, I invite you in today. I said, oh, put that on the card and we'll don't lose the card, we can all go dance. And then I have to come back to the club, and there they are. You walk in, they say out loud so everybody can hear it, their baby's coming in. Get your coffee and sit down with us. Listen, don't talk. So you listen to the kings a while, almost get comfortable. Then they say, it's time for you to go home and eat supper and come back to the meeting. I know to go home and eat supper and come back to the meeting. But they've got to tell you out loud where everybody can hear it. And after the meeting, he said, now go home and get on your knees and thank God for the day. I said, I do not thank God for the day. I hate you and I hate God and I hate her. And I hate this damn meeting and I'm not going to be a hypocrite. He said, do you feel like when you talk to God that you don't mean it? I said, that's right, and I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. He said, that has absolutely nothing to do with it. It's the action that you're taking that you don't know you're taking. It causes all the things to happen that you had no idea was going to happen. And all the things that you think has to happen probably will never need to happen, because once you take the action you don't know you're taking, and all the stuff that's going to happen that you had no idea was going to happen, then what you thought had to happen will never need to happen. I thought, well, hell, I understand that, for God's sake. I said, do you mean to tell me that God, when I pray to Him, He doesn't care whether I mean it or not? He said, not at all. You don't care. The group doesn't care. Nobody cares. That's right. Well, I just got in my car, and I went home, and I locked that door so what's-his-name couldn't get in there. Got down on my knees, and I said, okay, by God, God, thank you for a miserable damn day. Amen. Hell, if He don't care, and they don't care, and God don't care, hell, I don't care. Did everything they said just like they said for about 2 months. And I'm driving down that old 610 loop one morning, about 9:15, and this God that I had never known as my friend moved into that car with me. I hadn't done anything any different that day than any other day. And God, for the first time in my life, I knew something different than I ever knew it before. And I knew I would never need to take another drink of anything alcoholic or a mind-changing drug unless I myself insisted upon it. And I knew I did. God stayed with me all that day, and about 3 o'clock that afternoon, I thought, man, I'm going to get me a tent and some tambourines. And I'm going to go save some souls. Old Oral better look out. Jimmy's coming. I thought I might even let this sponsor help put up the tent. I don't know. I couldn't wait for him to get there. I'm 15 minutes early. He's about 10 minutes late, and he walks through that door, and I said, get the coffee and sit down. The Baptist is taking over. Now, they don't like it when you start giving it back to them. But he did it. And God, when he did, he sat down and looked at me. And I said, told him the deal. Then I was just waiting for him to make me the leader. And I was going to be nice and let him work with the tent. And he looked at me and grinned just a little bit and said, thank God we've got that over with. Now we can get started. I said, my God, that took a year. He said, some are sicker than others. I said, what are you going to do about old what's-her-name? He said, God, I'm not going to mess with that. My wife and I are leaving our deal just like that. I'm going to send you to a guy that's got it all worked out. And he sent me to an Episcopalian, and you know they don't know. And this guy says, Jim, I'm not going to ask you what you want. But said, do you remember when you first got into Alcoholics Anonymous? And you didn't fit in here, and you didn't fit back out there? And you thought you were the only one going through that period, and it was lonesome, even though you weren't alone? I said, yeah. He said, I'm going to tell you something. If you're willing to go through those lonesome periods in every area of your life, I'll not only guarantee your relationship with a woman and with women and with your fellow man like you've never imagined, I'll give you a bonus on top of that. I'll guarantee your relationship with Almighty God that you could never have dreamed of. I said, I don't believe that. He said, isn't that wonderful? I said, what do you mean? He said, you don't have to. She said, it's only the action. I said, I've already heard that. He said, are you still married? And I said, not really. I said, I've been praying for somebody to go with her, but they won't. He said, well, I said, we sleep in different areas, and I have two girls I've already picked out that I know are mine, and they won't let me do it, and I'm having brain damage not doing it. And he said, well, we'll practice on her. He said, what you need to do now is that you're never going to tell her what's wrong with her ever again. I said, who's going to tell her? He said, I don't know, but you're not. And you're never going to do anything to work her around with Al-Anons, with friends, with children, or anything else to work her around to get her to do what you want her to do. I said, never. He said, never. And you're going to pray for her. And I said, I'm not. You pray for her. He said, yes, you are. And you're going to have to say this prayer many, many times a day. Thy will be done for her as well as for me. Take our relationship. Let it become what you want it to be. Amen. And you may have said 100 times a day. Well, I started doing that. Started doing that prayer. Didn't want to. Did it. Did everything I did because I'm still ready to fly any day. And finally, this old sex thing I had surfaced. I'd already done my fourth, fifth step. And that thing surfaced. I couldn't get rid of it. And I told him, and I told him, and told him. And finally, I told him they ought to take her to Al-Anon. And says, my wife is taking her to Al-Anon, and I have not noticed it. And I want you to know, Al-Anons, I love you, and I'm willing to do anything you ever want me to do, day or night. Anytime you need me, you call me. She found you depressing. And the more she went to see you, the more she found you depressing. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it. Couldn't get rid of that old sex thing after it surfaced. And I finally told the group, they said, you're not supposed to tell that group. So I went over and told another group. And one of them snitched on me. You know, we don't gossip here. We're just concerned. So my sponsor said, usually when you stop doing something, God transforms your mind and takes care of it. But that's not happening to you. So I want you to go home. Oh, what's your name's out of town, going back to the valley. You go over and you lock yourself in and don't call anybody. Don't you call me. Don't you call a soul. So you and God get rid of that. See, one time they want you to call them, and next time they don't want you to call them. And I did, and sure enough, I cussed and prayed and cried all that day and that night. The next day, that thing was gone. And I went to four meetings before I could tell them. Then one night after we got the ice cream, I said, well, I guess I might as well tell you. And he said, oh, we knew it the first night. I said, why didn't you tell me? He said, well, you need to know that you're going to always be the last to know. I said, why is that? He said, we don't know. Well, when my sickness was gone there, oh, what's her name, and I had nothing. You know how to get sick? Make something out of nothing. So we got a divorce. Then I married a good Baptist that wasn't in the program or anything, and I thought that was going to win, and we did, except it didn't. But I only tried it 16 years. And the marriage I've got today is absolutely ridiculous, and the thing that's really wrong with it is nothing. But I'll think of something in a year or two, I'm sure. It's hard on you, Terry, but it's just the way it goes. But I've had the best time since we got married on New Year's Eve so we could end the year and start it right. And it really is something different. And like I say, it's ridiculous that it's just fine. So if this is a family meeting, we're getting ready to start over. Everything's good. God, I'm glad we're going to get to know. Wouldn't that be something if we'd have missed it? What if we'd have missed it? What I like about it is, you ever seen those bumper stickers that says, we found it? We found it. We wasn't even looking for it. They're out there looking for this thing. And we got it. Is that right, Pastor? We've got it. Isn't that amazing? Wouldn't you hate to miss this? God, something else. How could you get all these people? Did y'all know where you're coming here? You know what was going to happen? Can you imagine going to a meeting like this? And, how was that speaker last night? Oh, I thought he was pretty good. What did he say? I have no idea. Wouldn't have missed it for the world. We had to do something before the dance. Isn't that amazing? You want to be perfect? Well, you did, and you are. Isn't that wonderful? God, I'm glad you are. Hell, you got to stay here long enough to find out y'all. And if you try to be, of course you can. That's where they got us. But see, you did everything just like you're supposed to. You did everything just exactly right. Nobody is going to go do what you do to get properly prepared. Except the ones evidently God chose. That's you and me. You went out there. You thought you were going out there to get educated. You thought you were going to go out there to become self-sufficient. You thought you were going to go out there to have children and all that kind of stuff. And God said, that's not your deal at all. We've got to prepare you to get into A and Al-Anon so you and I can do what we've got to do here. All that time you went through all that stuff. You tried to belong. You tried to fit. You tried to do all that stuff. And you failed perfectly. Did it exactly like you're supposed to do it. How are you going to know? You can't know that you're insufficient till you become insufficient. And the trouble is, those folks will not do it. But you and I will. We not only will not do it, we insisted upon it. We wouldn't have had it any other way. Wouldn't have even thought about it being any other way. But the trouble is, you couldn't have had it any other way. See, I know a few things today. And I can't wait to know what I'm going to get to know. Because see, you and I are getting to know. And you and I really know what it is to come from that darkness into that light. Because we know. How do we know? Because we experienced it. And who was with us? Who chose us? I don't know about other people. I don't know anything about anybody else. Maybe God chose everybody. I don't know. But I know some things about you and I. I know without a shadow of a doubt. God chose us probably before we were born. And all that time, you and I out there running, trying to do those things we thought we was trying to do, we're doing exactly what Almighty God wanted us to do. And you couldn't destroy yourself no matter what you did. And you and I did things over and over and over and again, destroy us and everything around us. And what happened? We could not do it. For only one reason only. Because Almighty God had you and I in the palm of His hands all the time. We wasn't going to make it. We had to go through that and become the only place that you can become. Helpless. Live through the experience and to the experience of failure and helplessness. And once I experienced that, then I could pick up that phone and call in a group. And God said, now, I can bring you into my place that I have prepared for you. The word now, I can take you and take out all those flaws through these experiences that we're going to go through so that you'll be able to do everything that I've got designed for you to do for me. And 90% of the time, we're not going to know what that is. Because you know why? We'd go do it and tell him we didn't need him anymore. He brought us in that. You know why you didn't fit? Wasn't supposed to. God's children don't fit in this world. God's children are supposed to meet together and get their strength and let God send them out to do whatever it is He designed them to do. That's the reason we did exactly like we were supposed to do. And we gave it everything we had. And I'm proud of both of us. Wouldn't be anything but what we are for anything. I love the way we do it. And God says, to know me, you must be as little children. We're there. That's us. You didn't even know you was there. You got here, did you? There you are. We didn't have to become little children. We never changed. Isn't that something? That Almighty God, we did exactly what He wanted us to do. And you see, we won some battles, but we lost the game just like we were supposed to. And then when God sent us to be together, my life began to be different. Because when I made that phone call, not knowing to me that power that only God's children have began to work in my life. And the transformation of minds began to come as they are in yours and will in both of our lives. From now, there's no limit to where you and I are going to get to go, where you and I are going to get to be, as long as you and I stay together. Because, see, once I got with you, now I've got to lose some battles. But I've won that game, and so have you. And we're in the place for that power that never fails us. When we call one another, when we meet together, that power is alive in us and takes us through that life one day at a time, one hour at a time. As we invite that power in, it never fails us, and it's always with us, just like it's been here this weekend. There's no way to do this except by that power that you and I have that's alive in us today. But see, the difference was you. It was you that I had to be with. And once I was prepared to go through what it takes to become what Almighty God wanted me to be and wanted you to be, then you and I could be brought together just like we've been here. And it never fails. Thank God I stayed with you long enough to feel God loving me that day and me loving Him back. But see, the difference was you. Just like it is right now, with that power sitting right here with us. And I can feel you loving me and me loving you. Thank you very much.